Radio.
DV Radio is for you, the veteran, active duty service member, caregiver, and civilian supporter of the military. DVRadio.net is the online veteran network made for and by veterans. From original shows to syndication, you can find it here on DVRadio.net. In an effort to continue our mission and make better quality shows for each and every one of you, visit our Patreon at patreon.com/DVRadio. Whether you can only pledge $1 per month or that entire $1 million inheritance your uncle left you, there's a tier with rewards waiting for you. So why not keep DV Radio running and get rewarded at the same time? Head to patreon.com/DVRadio now. That's patreon.com/DVRadio.
DV Radio.
Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
I'm Nevermore, and I'm not normally this pleasant sounding.
I'm Frosty, and I'm just a frozen asshole.
And that's right, you got DV Oink, who loves to play and shit. I mean, no, wait a minute, hold on.
And they really didn't name your asshole 1 and 2?
That's what the boss calls it. It's...
Two people remember me, and one's folks, Mom.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
We were a little bit soggy.
Boiled bacon.
That's right.
And I'd like to introduce DV Midnight Backdoor for all your backdoor needs.
You know what that means.
We will talk really slow for you.
I don't know, some of those nights at work.
I'd say that's a different little bird.
Welcome to Frag Out, Drag Out.
Welcome to Frag Out, Drag Out. I'm Uncle Fester. We have DV Frosty with us, DV Oink, and we have a special guest with us, Vanessa from... Oh, come on now. Operation Mary Louise.
There you go.
Okay. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Would you like to tell us about your military history and go from there?
Sure. First, thanks for having me on here. I really appreciate it, and it's good to be here with you. So my name's Vanessa Mead. I'm a professor at the University of Alaska, Anchorage, in the School of Social Work. And my military history is I was active duty for 4 years and in the National Guard for 4. I was a military police officer and paratrooper stationed at Fort Bragg. I was also stationed in Puerto Rico. And then when I got off active duty, went into the Guard and kind of did several different things from those of you in the Army, NBC NCO, to also I did some vehicle maintenance aspects, like wheeled vehicle mechanic. So that's kind of a little bit of my military background. I was also a state trooper up here for 5 years, so I have a first responder background as well within civilian world.
Very cool. I was a firefighter way back in the day. I'm the oldest one here, so.
Okay. Great.
I was a firefighter 20 something years ago, so.
Okay. Yeah, I was a state trooper for about 5 years. I left in 2009 to go back and I worked at McLaughlin Youth Center for about 7 years up here, but I also did my doctorate while I was there too. And that's kind of one of the things from leaving the troopers was to also get my doctorate. So.
That's cool. That's very, very cool to have someone that's been a first responder.
Yeah. So, well, it's great to be here.
Oink or Frosty, any questions?
Well, what?
No, I'm mixed with your military background and, of course, you know, the state trooper aspect. I'm sure you've seen quite a bit of stuff. We'll just leave it at that because obviously this is Alaska. And myself and Frosty, we've been up here for quite a while. And, yeah, we love it up here. We wouldn't call it any place but home, but yeah, you definitely see some strange stuff up here, that's for sure.
You do. People are always like, oh, I couldn't have been that busy as a trooper. I'm like, oh, you have no idea.
It's a whole different world up here.
It is. I love it up here, too. I actually have a connection to Alaska. I don't know if you all know who Richard Prinicky is from One Man's Wilderness. He's the one that built the cabin out in Lake Clark, and there's a couple videos done about him and stuff. And he was from my hometown in Iowa, and he come back and show me and my brothers. I have three older brothers, and he'd come back and show us 8mm film and photography that he did that helped Lake Clark become a national park. And I just fell in love with Alaska. You know, I was a kid, and he had a book in the library. I grew up in a really small town in Iowa, you know, and like somebody having a book was a really big deal. So yeah, so I was really, and I came up here a couple times after I got off active duty. I didn't come up here with the military. I came up after. Just fell in love with it, and then came up and visited a few more times, and made the final move when I finished my master's. Just drove my truck up and made the move.
He's the one that did that cabin building video, correct?
Yes, yeah, that's him.
It's kind of funny because one of our coworkers, Oink and I, work together out here on J-Bear, and one of our coworkers came in and we watched, or he was showing it that video because he had just finished reading the book, one of the books. And was showing it off to everybody one day, about a month ago.
Yeah, it's a great, they have, PBS shows the videos quite a bit, but they also have them out. And then Lake Clark National Park, a guy named John Branson over there, who's the historian, he donated when he died. So his cabin is just amazing over there. If you ever get a chance to go over, it's just, it's phenomenal. He donated when he left. He stayed out there. He didn't build that cabin until he was in his 50s. And he stayed out there until, gosh, it was like 99, I think. The year I moved up here is the year he kind of left it full time. He was starting to have some health issues. He kept a daily journal every day of the weather and all that stuff. And they've transcribed his journals. And those are available too. And wow. Then they also have... they also have the videos and there's talk. My hometown in Iowa actually built a museum about him.
Wow.
in the new library they built, they actually replicated the cabin in Iowa, which is pretty cool.
Very cool.
So yeah, he is a big influence and just this really, he'd come back and set up his projector in my aunt and uncle's living room and we'd go over to their house and he'd tell us all about and show us all of his photos. And yeah, so.
And you're like, one day I'll be there.
That's right. I used to, you know, do the things kids do, like, you know, in the Midwest, the farm tractors, they take the cabs off in the winter, the big cabs, and they set them down. So I pretend like it was my cabins and I was tracking rabbits and cats and thinking I was all cool.
Very cool.
Eating beef jerky, you know.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about, Operation Mary Louise and kind of how you got into that and what it's all about.
Sure. So Operation Mary Louise is a statewide women veterans visibility project. And what we're doing is really trying to reach out to women veterans in the state of Alaska, because a lot of us aren't visible. There's a lot of us here, as you all know, we're both males and females. We're per capita number one in the number of vets that we have, the percentage of vets that we have in Alaska.
Yep.
But a lot of times, a lot of the organizations and things like that, women aren't just really seen or connected to services either. And so this is I started a nonprofit for women vets back, gosh, in 2011, called Alaska Veterans Organization for Women. And through that work and through the development and the support of people like the Rasmussen Foundation, the Alaska Community Foundation, so let me tell you about Mary Louise first, because I can't go further without talking about her. She was just this amazing woman vet. And I don't know, do you all know about her?
I've read a little bit, but every time something comes up about her, it's like I learned so much more. And it's like, wow, yeah, she was pretty amazing.
Yeah, so she was head of the Women's Army Corps as a colonel way back in the day. And she did amazing things, for women and also, for people of color in the military. So she was as the head of the Women's Army Corps, she created, ways for Black women and, you know, Caucasian women to work together, and it really helped integrate the military. So she was one of the integral people in integrating the military. Another thing that she did, you know, there was a lot of assignments that were men only assignments, and she really, worked with the Army to ensure that, you know, some of those positions, some of those positions were opened up to women that could be opened up to women at that time. Of course, now it's different. You know, everything's open to women, but you know, that's been a process over many, many years. And she was one of the ones that actually also kind of helped set up for women to be integrated into the regular army and not be a separate, you know, women's army corps. And she was just this amazing person. She, towards the end of her career, she met Elmer Rasmussen and married him and then moved up here after serving 20 years and in the army. Moved up here and, you know, also became this amazing philanthropist up here and did so much work with, like, you know, the Rasmussen Foundation, you know, like the museum, all of those kinds of things, along with many, many, many projects in Alaska that they were, you know, that she assisted in help funding and through the Rasmussen Foundation. And so a lot of people know about her in that way, but they don't know a lot about that she was, you know, this amazing woman veteran. And so our, you know, it's a perfect kind of person to be, to have, you know, the operations name, because she's, you know, she's exactly what we're talking about, how women, you know, get out of the military, but go on to do other things. But then the military service really isn't brought out as part mm-hmm. of their, as part of their background and experience. And we just really want to make women vets more visible in Alaska. So that's, so we kind of have three things that we're doing through that. One of them was already kind of done through J-Bear and in a partnership with them to increase what their the women's and also with a federal mandate that occurred to increase for the, you know, the TAP program, transition assistance program, as people are getting out, to have more resources available for women vets, for people to know about those. So that was one of the first things that was accomplished with it. And so now we have a website that we just launched in November that's a way for women veterans to go on, and you can also submit photographs and of yourself in the military and even after military if you want to, and you know, a little bit about your service. We're going to be making a page that's just dedicated to Alaska women veterans on there, and it's also a way for you to kind of register as a woman veteran in Alaska, because one of the things that has happened is we as you all know probably, you know, when you get out of the military, you say where you're going, or if you're staying in the state you're in, then your DD-214 gets handed off to the state veterans office, right?
Yep.
But the problem with that is that it's not, it's unless the veteran goes back and updates it, it's not accurate information all the time, right? And so we're doing a push to really, you know, to find out how many women veterans we actually do have in Alaska, and particularly for our rural and indigenous Alaska Native women out in outlying areas too. Another really difficult thing of, you know, getting connected to services when you live out in different areas of the state. I know from living out there myself, you know, it's sometimes a little bit difficult to get connected with services. So our goal is to really increase the number of women vets that are using VA services in Alaska too, because there's this kind of myth that if you use VA services, it takes it away from someone else, right? But that's actually not true. The more people that are signed up for VA services, the more VA services there are then, because it's based on the number of people being served. So that's kind of an overview of the program and what we're trying to do in Alaska, and just really connecting women veterans to each other in the communities. So we have a monthly online meeting right now. It's online for women to women veterans to join. And we usually have a guest speaker for that. And just a way to connect and also share resources, because you know like I do as vets, we know once we know how to do something, we like to share it with everybody else, right? Like, oh yeah, this is how, you know, talk to this person over here, this person knows what they're doing, and you know, that kind of thing. So that's really one of our goals, is just to really create a community for women vets.
Very cool. Is this something that you're planning on just keeping Alaska central, or are you going to try and blow this up in the future? Do you have any plans on any of that?
Well, you know, there's a lot of women vets organizations in the country. And so I'm not really trying to, I'm, you know, my heart's in Alaska, so I'm going to try to do what I can here.
Keep the focus up here. I understand. Makes sense.
Yeah, and there's definitely other things that can be done as far as, you know, like working with other organizations and different things like that. I work with another organization called Veterans Path, and we do mindfulness-based retreats for veterans. We do what's called a four-month anchor program too. I help facilitate those, and I've done some program evaluation for them as well through the university. And it's a program that's been really helpful for a lot of vets to, you know, connect with meditation, mindfulness practices to kind of come home in ways that maybe we haven't, if for those of us that have been deployed, or those of us that had, you know, experiences in the military that maybe weren't the best. And also for people who did have good experiences too, everybody's welcome. But it's a way to really integrate meditation and mindfulness into daily living to help with pain management, you know, things that are coming up around, you know, post-traumatic stress and different things like that as well. And so that's a really, so I do work with them, and they're on a national basis too. And that's one of the reasons I started Avow back in 2011, was to offer these retreats for women vets in Alaska. And so we're in the process of bringing those back in some way. Not sure how that's going to go yet. And also with COVID, so kind of change things up a bit, but there's also talk of possibly, you know, also offering something similar with men as well. So we'll see what happens.
Interesting. Yeah. I was just in looking through your website on your resources. I just had noticed that a lot of them were, kind of either through the VA or for some of them were more bigger organizations, so to speak. So that's kind of why that question popped up.
With the goal of it being to really get people to enroll in VA services, a lot of it, you know, we're kind of, one of my things has always been trying to bridge, you know, nonprofit and VA, because I think that's one of the things that, you know, women often aren't signed up for VA services, and maybe because of what a lot of women experience, you know, sexual assault,
MSD,
sexual harassment in the military. And so to go to a system that maybe hasn't met, handled those situations very well. I liken it to kind of the Vietnam era, you know, vet center starting up, because vets didn't really trust, you know, going to the VA, and they wanted, you know, vet centered services. And so, you know, it's kind of a similar way that things have been handled, not exactly the same situation by any means, but a lot of women are a little hesitant to go to the VA, but it's also can be a really great resource, and, you know, and can really help people. And so we're really trying to connect and bridge, you know, there's a women vet program manager there, Anna Bullardick, and she's really working with women vets in, you know, trying to get them connected to services and the services they need. And so we have, you know, some kind of ways that we can talk with directly with people and get them connected directly to people versus a larger system of just trying to figure it out. Because, you know, I don't know if you all are involved in the VA system, and, you know, there's
a little bit
there. What's that?
A little bit.
Yeah. And I'm trained in systems, and that's my work that I do. And it's, you know, it's complicated because it's a big bureaucracy, right? So it's complicated. So, you know, but if you find somebody in there that can be an advocate and you can work with them, it becomes a whole lot less complicated. So that's really what we're trying to do, is connect women with people that can really help them get the services they need.
Well, one of the things that you just brought up a second ago was one of the questions that our host Nevermore wanted asked. And I was trying to figure out how to bridge it in, and you kind of led right into it. Was she asked if you're on... working with active duty or even female veterans that have been in MST situations, the military sexual trauma, and you're scared to report, are there any organizations or other places that you can reach out to help get through the process that are outside of the normal routes that you know of?
Yeah, that's a great question. And
I wasn't quite sure how to ask it, but you led me into it.
I appreciate that. It's okay. I think one of the things, there's a lot of very distinct things about, like, you know, how long ago it occurred and what state it was in when it happened, or country in some cases.
Yeah.
We really you know, kind of rely on the legal aspect of that, of connecting people with legal people that know those kind of things way better than I do.
I understand.
As far as, but there's definitely some resources out there, and the Service Women's Action Network is doing quite a bit with that. It's called SWAN on the national level. And so they're also available for advocacy and things like that too. So anybody that was could be interested in that could be contacted them. And you can always contact me, and I can try to connect people with resources too that they need.
Very good. Yeah, it was one of those that we always, when we get somebody on that deals with the resource and stuff, that's usually something that comes up, because we've had a lot to come on that it's like, at the time, they just didn't know where to go, and were without being within the chain of command. And a lot of times, the chain of command seems to be part of the problem.
Yes, absolutely. And so, as you all know, too.
What's
you know,
that?
It's not just, I said, as you all know, too, it's not just with, you know, sexual assault, but lots of things, you know, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, your command kind of sets the tone for how things are dealt with and handled. And so if you have a great command, a lot of times things do go well. But if you don't, and you know, the way people's particularly officers you know, ratings go, which is tied to how well their unit does, so they have an active interest in making sure those things aren't well known, right?
Exactly.
And that's one of the issues, and that's one of the things that's been happening on the national level too, is to try to take, you know, keeping the process within the chain of command, but the investigation from outside, because of those types of issues that come up. And women, I hear that from women over and over and over again. You know, that they're either told, you know, that, you know, they were going to get in trouble. And many women actually do get discharged because they've reported something in the chain of command, you know, and many times they're discharged with something that, like a personality disorder or something like that, that actually bars them from getting services once they leave.
Yeah.
And so there's ways also to work with getting the DD-214 changed, your discharge status changed. And so if there's issues with that, we can definitely connect you with, we don't personally do that, but we can connect people with resources that can help them with that.
So it sounds like you guys just are kind of mainly right at this point, just being like a resource center, kind of help people direct, all right, here's what you're looking for. Okay. You're going to want to go this route, or you want to try this route, or go this way.
Yeah, absolutely. And with the goal of getting more people signed up for VA services. So that's one of the things, you know, as you know, a lot of people, you know, busting those myths about using VA services. Like I said, the main one is, I think, you know, oh, well, I'm taking away from somebody else if I'm using it, which is not true. So if you think that, don't do that. Stop it. But yeah, the second piece is also, you know, it's, how we get, you know, like a lot of women, it's still amazing to me when I'm, you know, out and doing public events and things like that, that, or trying to get the word out about, you know, Operation Mary Louise, or, you know, women veterans in Alaska, and how many women, if you ask them, are you a veteran? They'll say no. But if you ask them, did you serve in the military? They'll say yes.
Wow. Yeah, that's weird, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just, you know, and that's changing. I think it's really changing with the younger women vets, because, you know, there's, you know, like I said, you know, the services have really opened up to women in ways that that weren't there before, as far as, you know, if you can, you know, one of the things that was funny, I used to have people tell, you know, the guys I work with tell me, it was like, well, you know, why can't why do women even want to, women can't do that, most women can't do that. I'm like, well, most men can't either.
True statement.
Or, you know, like Navy SEALs. I mean, it's elite, right? So yeah, absolutely. But whenever they say, well, women, you know, most women can't do that, so why, you know, why even let them in? It's like, well, why would, then we shouldn't let men do it either, because most men can't do it either. You know what I mean? So it's like, so, or don't want to, you know, that's the other piece too, right?
And that's one of the stigmas that we try and, at DV Radio as a whole, through all of our shows, try and point out to veterans everywhere. It's like, if you had that courage, or whatever, however you want to put it, to raise your right hands, take the oath, and serve that at least one day, you're a veteran. And it's,
absolutely.
I mean, if it's a lot of people that serve 10, 20 years, 30 years, and if they've never deployed, it's like, well, I'm not a vet. I mean, it's, we try and, like, no, you raised your hand. You swore the oath. You you put on the uniform, so you've earned the title.
Yeah, and everybody pretty much has a chance to, you know, like you don't volunteer to go places. They tell you when to go, right? So
exactly.
There's a lot of people that would have volunteered that, you know, in the units they were in were needed there where they were at and didn't get deployed. And absolutely. I think that's, you know, and one of the things too is like just the how we, you know, as veterans too, I think a lot of times compare, you know, like compare, well, I don't have it as bad as so-and-so, or I didn't have it. And it's not about that. You know, it's not about, everybody has their own experience and all of those experiences should be honored.
Well, it's like, Oink and I go at it all the time. He gets his steak and lobster. I get my crayons. I mean, it's.
Yes, I was retired Air Force. So.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, you have some good food. The Air Force was like, yeah.
And I did 5 years in the Marine Corps. So.
when I was in the desert, we were out doing, we transported Iraqi POWs back and forth to, you know, from Iraq into a place that we built as a POW camp and EPW camp, but I call it POW now. One of the things that we'd be driving down the MSRs and we'd see an Air Force sign for, and we'd like, we're going to have lunch, you know, try to go in and, you know, sign in. They always got mad at us, but they beat us.
we've got to the point where we all do it in fun now versus the malicious that sometimes happened when we were in, or it's the group of us do, and somebody else will try to jump in, and sometimes it just doesn't quite work right when somebody else jumps into the argument.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
all right, everybody, we'll be back in just a minute after this short break, and you've been listening to Frag Out Drag Out on DV Radio WDVR. Mike, why don't you tell us about our lovely sponsor?
But of course, hey, our show couldn't be possible without the great support and tremendous support from the K-Bar Soap Company. K-Bar Soap Company is the only all-natural soap and beard care options you'll ever need. Veteran-owned and operated, dish to bar, grab a 7.62-ounce grenade. That's right. It's a grenade-shaped soap. So grab it today. Make showering great again.
Radio. There's a place that is hidden because they do not pay influencers. They built their social media platform from the ground up for far less than any other, and they adhere to freedom of speech to the core. Oh, they're veterans that do it all for free? Who are they? Sayscape, Sayscape, Sayscape. You can grab your profile on Sayscape by downloading the app on your Android and iOS devices. If you'd rather, head to Sayscape.com and create your profile from your computer. Stop having forced posts and advertisements in your social media feed while algorithms choose what you get to see. Sayscape is where you can choose what and who shows up in your news feed. Say enough is enough. Escape today. Download Sayscape on your mobile device or head to Sayscape.com now. Sayscape.com.
Are you looking for veteran resources and peer support? Objective Zero has an app for that. Download the Objective Zero app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Access wellness resources like yoga and a free year subscription to Headspace, the world's most popular meditation app. Check out veterans resources and access our nationwide network of peer support. Speak to fellow women veterans or someone in your field and branch of service. You get to choose who you want to chat with. Learn more at www.objectivezero.org. That's www.objectivezero.org.
We're back on the air.
DV Radio. I'm Uncle Fester. We still have Oink, Frosty, and Vanessa. And Vanessa, question for you. Your organization, you have other organizations helping you, correct?
Yes, we absolutely do. So we have Operation Mary Louise has a steering committee that's been meeting for over a year now. And that steering committee is made up of people from, local, state and federal organizations that serve veterans. And so, like the VA, we have members of the VA that are on the steering committee, Verdi Bowen and Forrest from the Alaska Department of Veterans Affairs. We have a lot of people from nonprofit agencies, the Alaska Coalition for Military and Veterans families, they're on there. We have, of course, Rasmussen Foundation and the Alaska Community Foundation they've really helped with funding and making sure that the project continues and just amazing the support they have. Through the Alaska Community Foundation, there's a Women Veteran Fund that was set up in Mary Louise's name, to honor her service. And so that's where our funding comes from to be able to do the project. And then we also have somebody from the city. We have somebody from that has been involved with South Central Foundation that's been a part of it as well. Alaska Public Media is doing a really big campaign for us right now for Operation Mary Louise on public radio throughout the state. So we have a really large group of people that are really committed to making sure that, women veterans are seen and, honored in Alaska in the same way other veterans are. So it's a really, really great community-based project. And just appreciate everybody's involvement. I also have a co-chair of the steering committee, Penny Chapney. She's out in the valley. She's a Marine vet, and her and I have been working together closely on this as well. And we have we're trying to get some grants and different things like that too to be able to do some more programming for women vets and outreach. So. We're in that process and just really appreciate everybody's involvement. And it really helps to have that statewide perspective because it's very different, for women who live maybe on the road system or, Alaska in Anchorage here, more urban than it is for somebody who's, served and maybe in a village. And so we're really also trying to make sure that we have a very strong focus on outreach to rural and Alaska Native communities as well, because as you all know, probably that, Alaska Natives serve at a higher percentage than both men and women serve at a higher percentage than anyone else. That's something that's really important to me also, having lived out in, rural Alaska, to make sure that veterans out in the rural areas aren't forgotten.
Very good.
Most definitely. One of the things I was looking over on OperationMaryLouise.org, some of the facts of Did You Know are that there are over 1.7 million women veterans in the United States. People don't seem to think about that number that high, but 1.7 million women veterans. And, speaking from a guy that's married to a veteran, because she was served 20 years right alongside me and retired the same
literally.
Time. We actually had the same MOS or AFSC. We did everything together and retired, had the same retirement ceremony and everything. So, so my hat's off because, it's funny because we'll walk down the street and if, one of us is like, especially if she's wearing like an Air Force hoodie or something like that, they thank me for my service first of all. I'm like, wait a minute, no, she's the veteran. She's the one wearing the stuff. Why are you thanking me? I'm glad to see that there is, women organizations, whether it be statewide or, national, especially state, because like I said, we live here in Alaska and this is something that's true to us. But one of the other things that I was looking at is that approximately 10,000 women veterans live in Alaska, but only a third of them are receiving VA, care or health services. That's 6,600 women veterans that aren't receiving VA. I mean, true, they could be receiving other care that we don't know about, but I'm just saying that's a high number of veterans that aren't receiving the care that they're entitled to.
Yeah, and that's just a guesstimate on the amount of women vets that are here in Alaska, too. I actually think that number's a lot higher. I think we have a lot higher number of women vets. Those are the numbers that are people that have gotten out and stay, or their DD-214 has come here, or they've already signed up with some form of VA services, like, they might sign up for the mortgage, or the help me out.
The home loan?
Yes, VA home loan program. Thank you. They might sign up for that, but then they aren't signed up for health services, you know? And so the health services aspect is what we're really, you know, trying to, because that's the way we can also get more services. Like everything, most everything right now is outsourced out of the VA.
Even here in Anchorage.
Yeah, exactly. Especially for women vets. And so, you know, that's, you know, there's a different culture with working with veterans, as we all know, than working with, you know, in the civilian world. And, you know, that's why it's so important about VA services is that they, you know, they are veteran specific and they kind of know how to do that in ways that maybe civilians don't. And not that people can't use civilian service. That's not what I'm saying, but like, you know, it should be, we've had women that have gone to some civilian thing and they just don't know, you know what I mean? They just don't understand the issues and they don't understand like the things that the VA, all the VA medical people are trained on around military sexual assault and trauma and you know, around post-traumatic stress or those kinds of things that, you know, it's just different. And whenever a system is trained in that, than if you go to a system that isn't.
I'm curious to, of that large percentage that might be out in the villages and stuff, how much of it is just due to the access because of it being such a challenge to get a lot of these services out there?
Yeah. And access is huge. And, you know,
I mean, I realize a lot of it's going towards the telehealth and a lot of that stuff now, but still a lot of stuff needs more than just, a webcam and a Zoom call. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a couple of things to know about that too, for people who are out in rural or outlying areas. Even if you're not Alaska Native, you can utilize the local tribal health as a veteran in the state now. It didn't used to be that way, but a lot of people don't know that. And so even if you're out in, you know, like I lived out in the Iliamna area and Bristol Bay region. And, you know, when I was out there, I wasn't using VA services at that time because trying to get in was expensive, right? Because you have to fly in and I wasn't service connected. And so I couldn't fly, you know, it wasn't reimbursable or anything. So I couldn't really use VA services. But if I was out there in the same place, I could. So that's a big change that's happened in the state in the last, you know, 6-7 years. Another thing that is happening too is that, you know, for Alaska Native people using the VA, they used to still have to pay copays. And if they didn't use the tribal and they wanted to use VA services, they'd have to. And so there's a couple of bills in federally right now. John Tester from Montana, I believe. He's one of the ones that, and I can't remember the other person's name, that's trying to make sure that copay is waived for any Alaska Native veteran that wants to utilize VA services.
Very good.
So there's some things happening on that level too that are really important. And, you know, women veterans are the fastest growing population of veterans. And so our numbers are growing. They're going to continue to grow. And we need to be able to have, you know, access to services and the services we need just as like anybody else does. I remember when I got out, aged myself a little bit here, but it wasn't that long ago. But okay, I got off active duty in 96. And I got off active duty in 92. And, you know, one of the VA places I went to didn't even have a women's bathroom. And a lot of people don't know that the VA actually didn't even have to start to provide services to women veterans through the health programs until 1988. That's, you know, that wasn't that long ago. I mean, for some of us, it really wasn't that long ago. For some younger people, it might have been a really long time ago. But, but how that is really, you know, also, you know, a pretty big culture change that happened that, you know, still is. And they're also supposed to be putting together a women veterans. There's no specific women veterans aspect within the VA for a women veterans health program. My understanding is they're creating that.
That's a good thing. I mean, that's definitely a good thing. Speaking of women's veterans and being the fastest growing population of veterans, do you see a correlation with that when it comes to homelessness? Do you see more homeless or requests for services for women veterans that are homeless?
Yeah, since we point people towards resources, we don't really, you know, get specific, you know, stats on that kind of thing. I do know in Alaska that we do have a lot of women veterans that are homeless and are houseless, is probably a better way to say for me. that they may be in temporary housing with family members or friends or couch surfing or those kinds of things. So they don't typically fall into the traditional, you know, homeless or houseless population that people, you know, look into. But there's definitely, we definitely have an issue with that. And women veterans overall in the country also, the homelessness rate is way up there. And so, you know, when you look at the percentage of women veterans there are and the amount of homelessness there is, it's definitely a problem. And, you know, I know our state and city are, you know, working on some initiatives to try to really help with, you know, homelessness in general, but also for veterans as well.
So, yeah, because I know that's one thing that when Frost and I talk about Alaska a lot, and, you know, we mentioned the homelessness here in Anchorage or even in Alaska as a whole, and they're like, there's homeless in Alaska? Why? Wouldn't you freeze to death, you know? And it's like, well, yeah, that happens too, you know, unfortunately. But yeah, there's just a huge population, just like there is, you know, in the lower 48, of people that, you know, through their own demise or through unforeseen circumstances, you know, that become homeless, that, you know, unfortunately, it's, you know, it's not an ideal situation to be in, especially up here, you know? So right. Yeah, it's not just, you know, you know, in the lower 48 problem, it's everywhere.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things too that, you know, is really important to also talk about, you know, right now with COVID, we don't really know what the effect of this is right now. You know, it's been, you know, 9 months of, you know, isolation, which some of us vets are really good at that. You know, isolating, and it's like, okay, this is like, I got this, you know, but other people, you know, it's also, we are already, isolation isn't always a good thing, right?
Yeah. And some of us that can handle it, or it's reaching that point of, okay, I need something to happen.
enough, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think that's one of the things that's going to be a big, you know, it's going to be ongoing issues that we're dealing with around that. I think the VA did a really good job in switching over to they pretty much switched their entire system over to telehealth very quickly, or, you know, video health.
One of our hosts on another show has been, we're helping, basically he's in North Carolina and has been one of the guinea pigs for that program back there for, I don't know what's he been on there about 4 or 5 years now he's been in that program.
Yeah. Right. Where they've actually issued the iPads for those communications.
They have some resources that they're really utilizing to get people, you know, connected in ways. Yeah. And also, you know, they're overwhelmed too, because there's so many people with need right now.
Yeah. So I think it's like they were already on track, and this just kind of gave them that little extra boost to actually pull the trigger on some of the stuff they'd been playing with.
Yeah. Especially, you know, here in Alaska, again, because of the rural nature, right? And able to utilize, and, you know, in past years, the internet connections, and still in some villages and areas isn't great, but it's a lot better than what it used to be. And people are way more connected than they have been able to be, because of, you know, fiber optics being laid and all the stuff that's going on with, you know, increasing the ability for people to access internet in rural areas. So that's been super helpful as far as me. I know when I was out in that area, out in Southwest Alaska, like we had, my radio didn't work as a state trooper. We didn't have cell service. I was like, you know, literally just had to hope if I got into trouble that somebody would pick up a landline and call Dillingham, and maybe somebody might respond within 45 minutes if there was another trooper I was stationed with, if he wasn't around, which a lot of times he wasn't, because he was out doing other things. So, you know.
Maybe within 45 minutes, get within radio contact range.
Yeah, right. And that's only if the weather was good, right? So
exactly. So, well, I know your time is short with us today, so any last things you'd like to say about your organization or anything?
Where we can find you.
Where we can find you. Yeah, plug all your stuff real quick.
Yeah, absolutely. So OperationMaryLouise.org is the website. And then we also have We're on Facebook and Instagram too. So if you want to go on and like us on there, that'd be great. We can, we put out information both via email and we have, we do a monthly newsletter too for women vets in the state. So you get information on stuff, and we're working on, you know, the website launch is just kind of goes in stages. So the first stage was getting it up and going. The second stage is going to be having more interactive material on the website itself for people to be able to engage with news and stuff about women vets in Alaska and that kind of thing. So we'll be working on that next. And I just really appreciate talking with y'all today and being invited to come. And it really means a lot to me. And just thank you for all you're doing for veterans in Alaska too. I just really appreciate you.
Yeah, we don't quite have the reach up here that you do. So it's, we're trying.
If I can do anything to help you all, let me know. Okay? I'm more than happy to do that too.
Yeah, just spread the word about DV Radio.
Sure will. Definitely will do that. And just to, and you know, that's how you do it though, right? Just do it and keep showing up and people will show up.
Exactly. And I guess we can go through real quick. And Fester, any last questions for our guest?
No, I just wanted to thank Vanessa for joining us today, and I hope that you'll join us again sometime.
I would love to. Love to have come back, so please invite me.
Yeah, we'll keep you in mind for that. And Oink, any last questions?
No, like I said, being a husband, you know, military service member myself, but also being married to a woman veteran who has been through the same kind of issues that I'm sure you all have dealt with, from, you know, the stereotypes of women can't do this in the military to, you know, you're not a true veteran because you never deployed to you name it, right? I mean, right. The list goes long and long. But, you know, I seriously thank you for what you're doing for the women veterans up here in Alaska. And if you're in a state you're listening to right now and they don't have a state-ran program, there is national ones out there. And by going to the Mary Louise .org, maybe you can look up hook up with some of those other organizations and find one that's in your area. So you know, never fret, there is great organizations out there, and this is just one of them, folks.
Yeah, and also if anybody wants to contact me, I'm more than happy to connect people. It's our email address is I'm getting used to it, sorry, it's new. OperationMaryLouise@gmail.com. so it's, we try to keep Operation Mary Louise that way for everything, so people, it's easy to find.
Right. Very good. I guess we'll go with our, I just kind of want to make a quick round, make sure none of our hosts had any more questions for you. And I really appreciate everything you're doing up here. And any closing thoughts for our listeners that we usually kind of give like a little 30-second or so last thought before we end the program. So
well,
the floor is yours.
Yeah. So I think, I think the main thing is to really, you know, see and ask about women veterans' experiences too. A lot of women vets, like, I've had people say that they parked at the Lowe's parking lot that has the veteran sign and then been cussed out by somebody because their husband should be parking there or something like that too. So just not assuming that all veterans are one thing or one sex. You know, we're all, you know, women are and have served just like men have, and just to really honor that in the same ways that we honor male veterans, and also, you know, all veterans need to be honored. And so just appreciating that, and, you know, kind of widening our scope of what a veteran is, I think is what's really important in this talk, and seeing more than just maybe what our experience is. So thank you.
All right. Fester, closing thoughts. You've already thanked her, so.
Yeah, you stole my thunder there, didn't we? actually, I'm looking forward to the next time we get you on the show, because I definitely like to get Nevermore and see if we can get a few others in to do another interview with you if you are up for it at some other point.
Absolutely. That'd be great.
Oink, closing thoughts?
Closing thoughts, again, you know, just keep doing what you're doing. I think you, what you're doing is amazing for Alaska, and I hope every state can at least mirror what you're doing in their states, because it's needed. It truly is. Like you said, women veterans don't get the recognition that they deserve. So thank you.
And as always, everyone, I'll close with my usual... check on your brothers and sisters. Make sure everybody's doing good. Check on yourself. Make sure you're doing good. If you need help, reach out. There's organizations all over the place. Objective Zero, Operation Mary Louise has resources. Was it 22 for None? There's resources everywhere. Reach out. Get some help if you need it, or if you've got a brother or sister that needs help. So. And with that, everyone, for Oink, Fester, Vanessa, Nevermore, who couldn't be with us tonight, thank you for listening. This has been Frag Out, Drag Out, right here on DV Radio WDVR.
Nighty night!
DV Radio.